Dr. Julia Lidger Munich discovered her interest in veterinary medicine while working with rescue animals as a child. She got her veterinary degree from Justus Liebig University in Glessen, Germany in 2007. Afterwards, she worked in an equine clinic on the overnight shift while completing her thesis work, which involved ultrasound studies of the udders of mares. She then went to England to work in an equine practice. She left that practice to start her own, which continues to this day. She was certified in chiropractic in 2008 and veterinary acupuncture in 2011. She is certified in Chinese veterinary herbal medicine by both the World Association of Traditional Chinese Veterinary Medicine and the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. She is also certified in Tui Na. In addition, she is accredited by the FEI to work as a treating veterinarian at sanctioned events. Please enjoy this conversation with Dr. Julia Lidger Munich as we discuss her education, her first years in practice, her transition to a holistic-only practice, and how she is constantly looking for opportunities to further her knowledge and skills. Dr. Lidger Munich, thanks so much for talking today.
Hello. Thank you. No problem. Thank you for inviting me.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Germany, in the middle of Germany, near Frankfurt, which is a big town. Kind of stayed there through my childhood, pretty much, where my parents were kind of coming more from the south, but that's where I grew up. And that's in the end, where kind of close to that, fairly close to that, where I went to university as well, a little bit further, but yeah.
Did you involved with horses at an early age?
Well, I would have loved to, but it sounds a bit cruel maybe in my eyes, but actually I wasn't allowed to. My parents wouldn't pay for it because I wasn't good enough at school. And I think the pressure just wasn't maybe high enough, or just wasn't kind of taking the pressure to say, okay, you know, I do more for school and therefore they will pay for my riding lessons. So that didn't happen at the time. We actually always, kind of thinking back now, we always had rescue dogs. So to get them out of, you know, flats and, you know, people not looking after them. And my mum was bringing my sister and I up together, i.e. just her as a single mum. And we still had these dogs, you know, coming in, feeding them up and then getting them to their forever home.
So, when did you decide you want to be a veterinarian then?
To be honest, I can't quite remember. I was always extremely keen on animals and was always, you know, always in love with them. And actually thinking back, I think when I was fairly little, we dissected in some of the summer holidays, we dissected quite a lot of dead animals from the pools and stuff. So I'm not quite sure whether that is any kind of, you know, sight that I could become a veterinarian in the end. But I think I was always keen. But again, my grades weren't good enough that I felt I probably would be able to do that. I always, I kind of had a bit of a different kind of route first before I came to veterinary medicine, really.
Was it difficult to get into veterinary school then?
Yes, it was actually. It's still, I think in Germany, still pretty hard now. And I didn't have bad A-levels, so the grades weren't too bad, but it wasn't that great either. So first of all, I had to do an apprenticeship, which is kind of, it was like in advertising. So I did that for 2 years and then worked a little bit self-employed. And then because you can, over a waiting list, you can wait. Some people wait for three, four years. And I had then, I think, 2 years, 2.5 years. And I still didn't have the grades because we don't have that many vet schools in Germany. And so I started going into human medicine. And had to do courses there. So basically did the first year in that, did the anatomy and all that sort of stuff, physics, chemistry, all the stuff that you have to do. And then what we call is a kind of going across, which is fairly unusual, I would say, because you end up not going into first grade, but into second year. So I could apply then, because obviously in Germany, lots of people drop out after the first year, after the first half of the year. So I kind of went across and kind of jumped straight into second year, if you like, because I had done part of the stuff in the human. And then from then onwards, the first year, I had to do basically double stuff, i.e. the stuff that I was doing in the second semester, really, plus the stuff that I had missed in the first semester. So it was a little bit more work, I would say. However, at that point, I was determined, full stop. It was like, this is what I'm going to do. There is no room for failure. There's no room for you can't do this or you're not going to do it. It was pretty clear that that's what I had to do, and that's why I did it. I mean, of course, in hindsight, if I would have been a bit better at school, done a bit more, it would have been a lot easier. However, I do suppose, you know, you're quite young usually when you leave school, so probably wasn't a bad journey.
You have that youthful energy.
Yeah. Yes.
So how many schools would you have applied to then, say, when you're doing that year of medical, pre-medical?
It works a little bit different in Germany. You have to have a certain numerus clausus. So you have to have a certain, or then at the time, obviously it's a little while ago. And depending on what that was, you could apply different ones. But because I knew there was no way I could have gone anywhere, I just applied straight away into the second year. And that's where actually the one where I was close to near Frankfurt, they basically gave me the space. Although I remember having a conversation with the professor, because they don't like doing it, because otherwise everybody would do it. And with somebody who kind of tried to put me off. I mean, I guess, you know, just they didn't want it. Are you sure you want to do this? Yes, I'm sure I want to do this. Trying to talk me out of it before they gave me this kind of accreditation and saying, okay, you can start in second year. But yeah, I was too late by that point.
Was there a lot of extra, how much extra work was there that you missed the first time around from the first year?
It was a whole of the anatomy that I had to redo, well, not redo, do for the first time, plus the second year one. So I had to do all those courses, all those exams. But I had already done some of the chemistry, physics, and I actually did human anatomy too. At the first year, just because I thought if I don't get into vet school, then I will become a doctor. And obviously that was second choice. But I thought, yeah, no, I'll do that if not. So, but, you know, to be honest, because I didn't quite know the difference to what you would have usually have done, the amount, there was just no, you know, oh my God, this is so hard, or oh my God, this is so much. It's just like, get on with it. You haven't got a choice. You've got to do this. This is what you've got. There's just no option. So there was never the question, was this too much or was it really hard? You just do it, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. After you got caught up, did you enjoy school then?
I did. I probably, in hindsight, I thought I've spent a lot of time with my horses then, and as well with my dog, and obviously revising. Sometimes I'm super studious. I'm not. I am, but I'm not. So I probably, in hindsight, I thought I should have maybe enjoyed uni life a little bit more, which I never did. You're always like, no, you've got to get on. You know, if you have a late night, you still got to get up early in the morning. You still got to do your animals. You still got to do all these things. So probably I should have gone out more and maybe had a bit more, let's say, kind of a bit more fun. But I did enjoy it. And some of the stuff, kind of if I think back now, the people that I met then, you know, friends that I'm still cherishing now, that was quite, it was quite inspiring. And, it, you know, I miss these times. I do miss it. I guess, you know, it's kind of a little bit like missing youth, isn't it? You're old enough. But I had a good time. I certainly had a good time. And I think back of it fondly. You can't wait then, can you? You want to graduate, you want to be a vet, you want to go out there, you want to do all these things. And so you're kind of waiting for it to come. And, you know, then when you look back, you think, oh, that was actually rather nice. Yeah. I wish I could go back.
Right. Did you have any exposure to holistic medicine in school?
Not really. Actually, that's not true. Yes, to a certain extent, but not really kind of thinking of it. I did some acupressure courses, actually, but I wouldn't have said necessarily that was the trigger of it. I can't really say. It was just like more what is, you know, what gets you to where you want to be, what gets your patient to where you want to be. Not so much like this is holistic medicine. There must be something else. I don't think I thought that far at that time, and thinking about it back in the whole lot, I think just things happened. So it just was a natural progression to fall into holistic medicine rather than thinking this is what I'm going to do.
Got it. So I'd love to hear about your thesis work. Tell me about that.
The thesis work, that was actually quite interesting. To be fair, it was really fast. So when you do the thesis, you have to graduate. So I was already a vet. And when you do your thesis, you become a doctor. So doctor med vet, that's a, it's like a certification, if you like. Not everybody has to do it. So it's quite hard work to become a doctor, if that makes sense. You're a vet anyway, but you to become this doctor. And my dad's a human doctor, and it was kind of not, there was, I don't think there was ever the question that I wasn't going to do it. So I found this big clinic, horse clinic further up north, introduced myself, and they were just absolutely, they needed people. And I was doing mainly, well, actually only night shifts then. It was a very, very big clinic of, they had 46 boxes, emergency, lots of colic surgery, lots of joints and orthopedics. So really quite good clinic. However, I have to say, as much as I think it kind of gave me a good idea of, well, equine medicine, really, it nearly broke me. It was horrendous. So it's, you know, the subject of the thesis, you know, that was great. I had a super professor, super, what we call is, we say it's a doctor father. So he will kind of guide you through your academic work and through your researches and stuff and helps you with that. And he was amazing. I did send stuff off at 2 o'clock in the night, you know, and I'd have it back by 7 o'clock in the morning. So really, really good support there. And I had to take samples of mares, udders, and basically that was the subject of my thesis, was to compare mares, udders ultrasonographically when they had been pregnant or when they hadn't been pregnant. So, and whether they had given birth or not. So whether there was obviously lactation or not. And so I had to take these samples of the, unfortunately, carcasses of the horses that died there. And kind of, we looked at that histologically and with ultrasound and so on and so on. So it was quite interesting, really, to kind of learn some of the research works, or proper research, really. But as I said, it was the whole time was horrendous. That is where I don't have fond memories. It was not very nice.
Did you and your advisor, so to speak, did you look at the slides together, or how did that work? He wasn't located close to you, was he?
No, he wasn't. I was working up in the clinic and he was back at university. So I would just send it off and then get them back to me. And then I'd look at the slides and, you know, work it all out, look at the things. And then he would, I would basically, because obviously it's my work, I would work it out, say, that's what you see. This is what you, you know, where the similarities are, where the differences are. That's how you can see it. And then basically, yeah, put my thesis together. And he would just kind of, you know, then question me or question things, and I had to rewrite it or leave it, or just to, yeah, make sure that the paper was good enough.
All the while you were working.
Yeah. Yes. I was working, but because it wasn't very nice there. I just got on with it. It was 2 hours away from where I lived before. So where my parents were. So I really kind of went up there. I didn't have anything else. I did actually take my two horses up there. But it's kind of night shifts. I don't know. There are some people who really thrive on it. I don't personally. I really don't do night work very well. It just maybe as well quite unlucky, because I went into an area where we didn't know anybody. And it's, you know, you kind of go into work when other people come home. And when you come from work, other people go to work. So there wasn't really much time to meet people, to socialize, to, you know, to really go out there. And it was all, you know, on a personal note, that was all rather difficult at the time. I had just graduated and my boyfriend and I just had split up, and I went there and only worked back. So it was just all, not the best time, you know, working wise, but at the end of the day, equally so, you know, I got it done. I was one of the fastest of my year who kind of got the thesis done, and, you know, that worked really. And again, I had the super support there, but I kind of left there as soon as I could, as I had my stuff together, which was still in my eyes long enough. But equally so, you know, in some respects, when you work nights, when you work only emergencies, when you have to look after all these animals, big clinic, it gave me a good basis, certain things I then wasn't scared of. So when I took my next job, which was actually going over into the UK, when I kind of, thought I'm going to come to the UK for a year, I actually wasn't scared of these things. So that was a super benefit, that certain things, which probably I want to say, you know, other people who hadn't had that exposure would have been a little bit like, oh yeah, that's easy. That was probably more to me where I thought, well, this is just the run of the mill stuff. I hadn't had much exposure of the run of the mill stuff. I had the, you know, the colics, the, you know, the joint flushes and so on and so on. So I guess it was a little bit reversed, but it gave me some sort of, you know, confidence, I guess, to just do my day-to-day work afterwards in the UK,
absolutely,
in a foreign country.
Did you feel like, did you go into that position having had exposure or done any of that in school? Or was it just a bit, you know, you just straight away right into it and learned on the job?
You mean regards the horse work?
Well, the technical things, the joint flushes and the scoping and all that.
No, that, well, a little bit of both, I suppose. You kind of, you know, at vet school, you get certain things done and you do certain things. And obviously, because I always, you know, then kind of later on had horses and had been exposed to them quite intense and so on, you just get on with it. And to be fair, in some respects, I didn't have an awful lot of support in that job, but I could do things. They would let me do things. So it was a little bit learning by doing, I expect. There were some old kind of fashion bosses who kind of would let me just do my stuff, I suppose. So, and then again, having the confidence from the clinic beforehand that I just, you know, and I sometimes think, you know, sometimes you, it's a little bit, you kind of got to get on with it. You know, I have to say, this all sounds very much like a gung-ho, you know, like a gung-ho way. In fact, I'm not like that at all, at all. I'm always playing safe. I'm always, you know, making sure that I always reflect on it internally, thinking about it. Is this really the right way? So I'm quite careful in what I do. But in some respects, I just had to do it because there was nobody there who would have done it otherwise, I suppose. You know, they wouldn't have had the time or wouldn't have said, yeah, we'll do that for you. You know, got to get on.
As intensive of an experience, though, I think, I mean, the point is that you left there with a whole lot of confidence and a whole lot of skills that your classmates didn't have, most likely at that point, you know?
I suppose in some respects, maybe, but it probably didn't feel like that because I just, I wouldn't have thought so. One of the things I have to say that was very, very different, though, the duty of care, not duty of care is probably the wrong word for it, but the way we treated colic post-surgery clinic, like horses, colic horses particular in Germany was absolutely second to none. I have to say, as much as I disliked the time there, they were absolutely fabulously monitored. And I remember maybe that was, you know, that particular clinic or what, but even if I looked into other clinics, it wasn't as good there because they just didn't have the time frame going, like the time frame, the clinical staff, maybe even because where in that clinic where I did the thesis, obviously I was a vet, I was qualified, but I had to measure these horses, bloods and everything pretty much every, you know, 30 minutes at times, hourlies, at 2 hourlies. And I remember when I went back into, you know, and that was, I think, a spasmodic colic into the clinic that I worked then in the UK, they would just kind of go late and maybe check once in the night, come back to the clinic and then check again in the morning. And I just wasn't used to it. It's like, how can you do this? You've got to check it every hour. You've got to check it every 2 hours, you know? So that was a little bit of a different in a way, but said as well, well, it still works that way. You know, is it always the best that you can do? Is that always what you do? So it was a very different approach at times, let's say.
Yeah. So what took you to England?
Probably a couple of things. My dad, when I was at university, I spent at the clinic that was my first, I want to say, proper job without the thesis. They already knew the clinic because in uni, you have to do a certain amount of experience practical stuff in some clinics. And I did that for 3 months over there. And I knew at the time after I finished the thesis, they were looking for a vet. So it was just like, yeah, I can go there. And funny enough, at the time when I was there for 3 months and really enjoying myself in the UK, saying this is fabulous, I thought, you know what, I could imagine living here. Not even thinking that I would ever move to the UK. And obviously I'm married now with 2 children. So it was a bit of a, yeah. And they, as I finished, they were looking for a vet. As I finished in the big horse clinic, they were looking for a vet. And basically I didn't even, they just said, yeah, do you want a job? And I thought, yeah, why not? So the plan was really to go for 1 year and then come back. And and then I met my now husband. And the rest is history.
So how long were you in that job then? In England?
I think a couple of 3 years. But I left because I felt utterly unsupported. Actually, it was one case that really did it to me, where at the time a disease of horses wasn't that well in the old fashioned way, wasn't that well diagnosed and so on and so on. And I hadn't seen that before and I thought that must be it. I tried to talk to them about it and said, well, this is what this horse has got. And they kind of, you know, got the horse in themselves. So my bosses then and did a lameness workup and, you know, and basically showed me off in front of these clients as the dumb new little vet who didn't have a clue. But it got later on confirmed by a lab that I was in fact right. It was a PSSM horse, and with quite severe clinical signs. And so when I kind of came back and I said, well, actually, in fact, it is not only the lameness, it says, well, this disease, they completely brushed me off. And I thought, you know what? I'm out of here. This is not, you know, this is not how I like to be treated. And then I set up my own practice from then doing conventional work, which is very early on, I would say, but I didn't really feel like I had much option then. So I just thought, I've got to get out of here. I did at that point apply at another clinic as an assistant job. Was another horse clinic. And funny enough, probably in hindsight, it was the best thing that ever happened because they didn't take me. And their reason was that they said I sounded too much relying on them, which I remember when we had the interview saying, you know what, if I'm not sure about something, I will ask. And that is to this day is my, you know, if I don't know, I will certainly touch base with, you know, some of my friends, you know, somebody I know who's better in that subject or whatever, just get some reassurance. And they put it out as if I was maybe not confident. They put it out or they maybe understood it. And again, that could have been, it's not my mother language, English. So it could have been that I came across very not confident. And I was quite confident or confident enough then. But obviously I always, to this day, I think it's a real strength to look at what you can't, to know your boundaries, you know, when do you have to stop? And I think that is a massive, massive subject anyway in holistic medicine, to know when you've got to go conventionally or when you don't, some of us don't, and I don't combine conventional medicine with holistic medicine. I'm holistic only. So all my clients that need conventional medicine will go back to the conventional vet. And I think that is always the case, that you then have to know when to stop. And I think that this is as much as it's a great strength to know where your boundaries are. I mean, you know, and the fact that I don't use conventional medicine is nothing to do that I don't like conventional medicine. It's just I don't do it. You know, there's people here who are much more experienced than me in conventional medicine, and, you know, they will give the best care. So I stick with what I know and do what I'm good at and what I'm very passionate about. And they do the other bite. And I think that is serving the animal, in my opinion, for me, for my practice, best.
Yeah. So you started your own practice. How was that?
Daunting. And to start with, I was known in the area as a horse vet because I worked at that clinic. But I remember my dad asking me at some point, so how many clients do you have? And I said, well, maybe one a week. And he said, you mean one per day? It's like, no, one per week. So, so thinking, oh my God. But, it worked out in the end. I mean, you know, I was then together with my husband who supported me, and we kind of, you know, got it all there. You've got to, I think with every practice, you always get the kind of the bonkers clients who kind of have been everywhere, and then they kind of come to you. And that happened as well, which can be extremely frustrating, certainly if you're only setting up. So it was kind of quite daunting. But at that time, I had already started in before the other clinic with my chiropractic education, and finished that and did that a lot, or tried to push for that. And so that kind of, I was including that, and that probably was taken a little bit more by people because it kind of worked out that way. And I think that was probably the start of the journey. And it wasn't even that I thought, I've got to do this. I'm feeling totally holistic. I've always been fairly grounded, fairly connected to earth. I would say, you know, you like good food, you do things right. You know, I'm not a high tech person. I kind of know where my phone goes on and off and that sort of thing, as far as technical stuff is concerned. And I guess that got me to a certain satisfaction, I would say, with the clients. And then the next, you kind of get hooked, don't you? It's, it was then, okay, your chiropractic is just not enough. You know, where do you go from here? And, then I, started at one point, I think that was, I started with education or going to, I think it was a 1-year course or slightly over from 14 months, 16 months, something like that, with, to become a certified acupuncturist. Yeah, and then the rest is history. I mean, I think I was already doing herbs then, but I would say it's probably want to say six years ago, since I have done any conventional work. So it really was kind of at some point, you've kind of got to choose, choose your battles, and you've got to choose where you want to be. And that's when I took that. And I had two kids in between as well. So that probably did help that the practice wasn't as busy, that I could still, I mean, I never stopped working, to be fair. I think I worked the last client, I don't know, a couple of days. I think it was a colleague before my first child, you know, the day before or something. So I was still working then. So I never kind of stopped. But because I guess I wasn't as busy, it kind of.
What chiropractic course did you do, and why did you pick chiropractic as the first thing to study?
That was at the Backbone Academy in Sittensen. And they were, I think, part of the American Association of Chiropractic. There is lots of politics. I mean, I guess everybody knows lots of politics going on everywhere. But it was more the fact that I think the course had been done by a friend of mine who was really, really kind of very satisfied with it. And I have to say that gave me a good education, really good education. It just kind of happened. I want to say, I thought I've got to do something else and I want to do this. And that was just the start, really, I think.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it? So you had to go over, how many trips do you have to make?
I can't remember, because most of my, pretty much all of my education that was, which wasn't online, would have been abroad on the continent. So whether that was Holland, whether that was, I think I went to Switzerland, whether that was, or Germany. So I did a lot in Germany, whether that was English speaking, quite often, English speaking courses or English spoken courses that taught language was English. But, I pretty much went abroad all the time, and I can't tell you the amount of times that that I've driven over. To be fair, at the time we moved last year, but at the time we lived very close to the channel. So it was actually just kind of hopping across and then driving to Europe, wherever you wanted to be. So I did an awful lot of driving then. And until I then did the acupuncture course, and that was another year, I think.
And where was that course?
That was with the Chi Academy in Fintan. With Ferdinand Niesen. That was the first start of acupuncture, and it's because I have trained with them. I trained traditionally, and I'm very, very fond of the traditional Chinese medicine. Well, that's what I do: traditional Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese herbs. That is really my thing. But I have to say, when I started it, it was very difficult to take that step into Chinese way of thinking, of finding patterns, diagnosing patterns, feeling it, you know, and then treating it and having the confidence in treating that rather than giving it a Western name, which obviously at times is very convenient when you can translate, but it is at the same time very misguiding, not misguiding, but I always do think, I try to explain it to my clients how I see, you know, with a Chinese medicine, you look at the pattern, and very often in the Western way, and I'm not saying necessarily all the herbs, but there is one drug for an abundance of, or you say you've got a headache, but where's the headache coming from? You give it, you know, some painkillers for the headache, but is it coming because you did something to your ankle, you did something to your hip, you haven't drunken enough, you've got a slipped disc, you know, things like that. There's so many reasons why you can have a headache, and to get to that source, to get to that root of the problem, as the, you know, analogies of traditional Chinese medicine will be, or will, you know, will show, will teach you. That is what I thought was so fascinating. Of course, when I did the course for acupuncture to start with, I mean, it is so vast that it is really hard to just understand a little of it. I thought it took me really quite, I would say the first couple of courses that we were there, where they're obviously teaching you the basics, to just get a glimpse of what are they actually on about? I really don't get this, you know, and then you kind of go more into it, and then you still try to translate it, and you still try to find the Western pattern and retranslate or translate it back. So it took quite a while, I think, for me to get it's still at times now you fall back into the Western pattern, of course.
Do you feel it was an advantage to having done the chiropractic course first before acupuncture?
I think I work very different to your classical chiropractic. So, for example, I don't go on a bale. I work everything usually from the ground out when we're talking horses here. And I only need to touch the vertebrae and basically give it the right adjustment. Of course, the right angle, of course, the right amplitude. So all of that. And the neurology, I suppose, was definitely an advantage. But what it probably did was more the body feeling, i.e. what does the body feel like? Where is it right? Where is it wrong? What do the muscles do? You know, of course, anatomy. You can never learn enough anatomy, and I've forgotten so much again. You know, I should do all these courses again. And I would, in a way, if I had enough time and all that, I would love to do it all again, because you, there is so much. Each lecture, if you hear it five times, you can learn so much more every time you listen to things. So it was definitely an advantage just to get me feeling. And I think it was the right way around for me to get the basis, get my foot in the door, because again, the Chinese medicine is so different to the Western way of thinking that I could kind of relate to that, I guess, that body feeling, that touch and so on and so on. So it was definitely a good, and maybe as well, because in the UK, the acupuncture is not as widely spread, I would say, as it was or as it is now in Germany. And it is coming, it's definitely coming. But I guess if somebody hears a chiropractor or a back person, that's definitely much more than acupuncture for a horse or a dog. I mean, you know, holistic medicine is definitely coming massively, but at that time it was a bit more like, you're a bit odd. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I agree. That's the order that I did the courses in. And I just feel like just getting back in touch with the anatomy and palpation skills and all that, it was really helpful to do the chiropractic first.
Absolutely.
So what's your practice look like now?
It used to be that I was doing horses mainly, but it is that actually the small animal side has taken over massively now. And it's potentiated itself. I don't know quite. Suddenly it was off. It was really the last years. It just got more and more and more. I see quite a few horses still, and I'm very passionate about it, but I see a lot of dogs and cats. So mainly small animal, and it's just things, I don't know. Sometimes I think, I don't know, fate takes you wherever you should be, but we've moved last year and I'm building up a practice in, which is basically 300 miles away from where I lived until last year. But I've still got my old practice where I was before, because I feel quite responsible. And of course, my practice is established for quite a while. So I'm commuting forwards and backwards at the moment on a weekly basis. Just seeing them, seeing the patterns, looking at the animal. Compare it not to conventional medicine, but to me, I have about an hour per client. And we'll take that time and we discuss everything, because I kind of was thinking through earlier, what could I talk about? What courses have I done? I've done an awful lot of courses, and it is all these pillars of the Chinese medicine that I would say I'm really basing it on, whether that's your food therapy, you know, of course, acupuncture, herbs. And that kind of is what I do pretty much. Of course, there's other things, you know, and there's quite some influences of other people that I've met along the way, you know, that I would then refer to, whether that is homeopathy. And I'm not a homeopath, full stop. I think after actually one of the CIVT courses, it kind of put me a little bit at peace with homeopathy. Not that I was ever not for it, but I just couldn't grasp the idea of it. But there was one explanation that actually made it really into my mind that I think, yes, I can understand now why it's doing what it's doing and why there is so much success. Again, I'm not using it, you know, I use it like a little bit of a cookbook thing, but I've got some very, very experienced colleagues who are doing amazing stuff with homeopathy. And I just, yeah, it's quite fantastic. But obviously, again, that's not my thing. It is really, for me, it's the herbs, the Chinese herbs that absolutely, you know, that master it and that I find phenomenal. And interestingly enough, when I did the acupuncture, I know that kind of then some of the lecturers said, oh, you know, you will end up with herbs. And I thought, no, I don't want to do herbs. They're far too dangerous, you know, because you can really hurt someone. If you don't know your pattern, you can go wrong with herbs. You can't go really that wrong with acupuncture, but with herbs, you really can damage. And but at the same time, they're so, so powerful. And if you keep a couple of things in mind, and as I said earlier, of course, everybody's making mistakes, but I am a fairly careful person. I'm not a very, very, I would say, aggressive therapist. I let the body do its thing and then see where we need to pick it up.
Where do you see your practice going from here?
I would like to establish a practice in Wales more. So I would like to not have to travel as much. I will still travel because I've been where we were before for a long time. And I just would like to do more of it, and probably more, which is, I guess, once my kids are a little bit older, that hopefully will come again. I'd like to do more courses. I'd like to learn more. I've met some amazing people on the way, some amazing lecturers who really have had some quite big influence on me. And, you know, I'd like to listen to them again. I'd like to do maybe more networking, see people more, talk about it more, have more time to just educate myself more. And I've done it now for quite a while. And I would say I'm good at what I'm doing, although that's not necessarily the nice thing to say. But I think I kind of know a little bit of, you know, where I am. But I think I'm still only scratching at the surface. I would like to know so much more. And so that is, I think, where I would love to be. And I hope that I can somehow, yeah, do that in the not too far future.
It's never enough time, it seems.
No, there isn't.
Well, Julia, I think this is a good place to let it go.
Yes, it was, thank you very much.
It was wonderful talking to you, hearing your story, and I hope that we get to talk again sometime soon.
Super. Thanks a lot. All the best.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of the College of Integrative Veterinary Therapies. CIVT provides world-leading education in natural medicine, including 3 accredited postgraduate qualifications, industry-recognized certifications, and a wide range of evidence-based courses and webinars delivered by qualified and experienced practitioners. By bridging cutting-edge science and tradition, CIVT helps you to expand your treatment options to tackle your most challenging cases. And whether you're a veterinarian, veterinary technician or nurse, animal health professional, or someone who wants to learn more, they have the right course for you. Investigate their offerings at civtedu.org. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd appreciate if you take the time to tell a friend and to give us a favorable rating on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for your support. We'll see you next time.